You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey guys, welcome. This is a myopia recording where I'm on a good mic again, so that's a good start. We start this week with Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. This is our first in a long time where we had listener feedback, and that feedback was, you know, do the Indiana Jones series. The first one's fun. I think more of you were concerned about the second one, and no one wanted us to watch the fourth one. That's the real sympathy one, I guess. Now, that being said, I really enjoy these movies, all of them. Even the fourth one, which is not great, is still better than a lot of movies you'll see, especially for this show. So, with that in mind, Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark is a really fun movie. Thanks for choosing it for us. Also, if you're listening to it today, the day this comes out, I hope to see you at the Cineprov show where I will be riffing kind of a late Halloween pick. You know, I know Halloween just happened. And you're probably hungover if you're listening to this, but if you're not, tonight I will be at Cineprov riffing on a Halloween movie if you needed one last, well, I was going to say scare, but the scariest things are the non-serial killer in this movie and some pretty bad domestic abuse, so enjoy. Also, Paul Rudd is in this as a pedophile, or not a pedophile, I guess, as a peeping Tom maybe, but he ends up with a child, so that's weird. So see you tonight at the Plaza for those of you who are around. Thanks.
I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we have a sneaking suspicion that you don't actually listen to these promos.
So we're not going to make you listen to one. Bye!
Brought to you by the Watchathon of Rassilon, a podcast where Joe and Tony watch all of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Available on the ESO Network or wherever else you get podcasts from.
But honestly, where else would you go?
WatchYourRassilon.com?
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
True.
So strange.
Usually.
I can't imagine what that's like.
Do you want to?
That could never happen to me.
It might.
Lock him away. He's pure evil. Or insane.
Or human. My name's Kate. I have worked as a forensic psychologist, as well as in prisons and as a crisis clinician. My job was to figure out who gets locked up and who gets a key. To find the humanity in inhumane situations. So, are you sure you really want to know?
Yeah, maybe.
Because by the end of the episodes, you just might end up thinking,
I felt better before I knew that.
You can find me at IWB Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, sometimes Instagram, or you can email me at iwbpodcast@gmail.com.
Welcome to My Open Infinite Childhood. This week, welcome to November and our first series month in, I think, two seasons, maybe three? And with it, we are tiptoeing around probably my favorite franchise, outside of course, James Bond, although we'll talk about how they relate. We're doing Indiana Jones. And I couldn't think of a better host to host with me, my buddy Daniel here.
Hello, this is Daniel, and give me the whip means something entirely different to me.
So, since I was a youth, and I mean, who knows? I love the nerds who listen to us, but I don't know what your favorite franchise to rewatch when you were a kid. But I think mine was Indiana Jones. My mom and it's one of those things, like when you're really young, you don't really pick the movies you watch. And so when I was old enough, she's like, this is the movies, and so I must have rewatched these 100 times before Star Wars.
No, I mean, yeah, that's an interesting question. My favorite franchise to watch when I was young, because I don't know if I can really pick out one. I can pick out franchises I rewatch now, but back when I was a kid, I mean, I remember when USA did their premiere of Star Wars back in the day on cable, and we recorded that, so I rewatched that quite a bit. But Indiana Jones, yeah, that was another one.
Well, and it's funny because, like, Star Wars, I mean, who knows if we'll ever do Star Wars. I think the prequels are the fodder for this show, generally.
Oh, big time.
And I mean, maybe even Return of the Jedi, which is a controversial one, but that's kind of where we dabble.
It's retroactively controversial because I remember just back in the day when the entire trilogy was this gold standard.
Right, but the third one has always been like, I mean, goddamn, like stuffed animals, like dancing, like, well, yeah. Whatever. I remember when I first watched it, like my parents were off doing something and the babysitter was surprised we had never seen it. And so we watched it, and we were in a neighborhood in me and my brother John were together. Someone was watching us. I just picture it. Like, I do remember that. Indiana Jones just seems like it was always part of my life.
I do remember my big story about Indiana Jones was from the day I failed my driver's test. And the thing I did when I went home was put this in on DVD, because I had got that box set for Christmas one year. And I just fast forwarded to the bit where everybody's faces melted and imagined it was a DMV clerk. And I was so satisfied.
Well, and I mean, and to your point, I mean, this month we will do all of them, and thanks for the 250 people who voted for it on Twitter and Facebook combined.
Why are you making me rewatch the second and the fourth one?
Well, I'm actually curious how they all hold up, because I don't know when the last time I watched them all. It's like when I said we would do James Bond, and I guess now it's been over for almost a year and a half, but like, to rewatch all of them is a real treat, because I mean, you dislike the second and the fourth one. I think we all are kind of uncomfortable. Then when we get to the fourth one, I'll tell you my story of seeing it.
I've got a story about seeing that too, but it's a positive story, which is surprising.
Well, I mean, mine is a mixed story in that I didn't dislike watching it as much as others do, but mine is like a harrowing story of even getting to the theater.
Oh, boy.
But I mean, in general, it's not that I dislike these movies. It's just that, it's the same as Bond. I rewatch the ones that are like the top of the peak, and now I'm like, oh, I just could put any of them in and they're fine. I hope that's what happens with Indiana Jones, because this one that we started off with, Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is not even entitled originally Indiana Jones, it's like eventually Star Wars became Star Wars, A New Hope. This one was just Raiders of the Lost Ark, and now it's retitled Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
But I'm glad they didn't change the DVD. It just still says Raiders of the Lost Ark at the start.
On DVD!
Well, on Blu-ray, because we got Blu-ray and surround sound. Nick's basement, for anybody who's never been down there, is lit.
Oh my God, my basement is the most ghetto blasted 7.1 surround sound you could imagine. Nothing works right, but it works spectacular.
Can we still use that phrase?
Oh, lit?
No, ghetto blasted.
Oh, you know what? If we can't, I'm gonna claim it right here on the podcast, down to my NPR style mouth noise that we're picking up, because our mics are right in our face this time around.
Jesus.
So for those of you who are not usually myopia listeners, welcome. This is going out on the mission briefing feed for reasons that Daniel is going to describe now. So why, Mr. Sudsies, are we putting this on our Bond feed?
Well, because originally Steven Spielberg, his goal at the time was to direct a Bond movie, and I believe he was begging for the Broccolis to direct for Your Eyes Only, which came out the same year or the year after that movie did.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
Right. And they turned him down. So that combined with the fact that his last movie, which was 1941, which was a very famous bomb at the time, didn't do well. He wanted to reestablish his clout. So he decided, okay, I'm going to fulfill my Bond fantasies by working with my buddy George Lucas and recreating this 1930s serial hero.
Well, and the thing about all this is, like, okay, so regular and host of Geekly Oddcast, Thomas, is like, well, when we put it out on Facebook, I'll be blunt. The way we did this is first my three executive producers and our, I guess, editor-in-chief here. Candace, the editor-in-chief, and then Thomas, Matt, and Daniel, and I voted on the series that we had always wanted to do. We picked the top four, and then those were put out to our Twitter and Facebook followers. And Thomas argued that, you know, the TNG movies are better because generally they have a strong fan base and most of them were kind of mixed.
I liked First Contact, but I never got into TNG or Star Trek in general, which I think I've said on the podcast before.
Well, we'll get into this more when we actually do these movies, and I'm sure we'll do some of them, but I was never a Star Trek person at all. And it's not because nerds. I was a nerd too, and my desperate nerd aversion is what made me kind of hide that fact.
Well, what's different about this compared to Indiana Jones is that Star Trek to me has always felt kind of old hat. Like, by the time I was a kid, I'd already seen stuff like that before, just referenced everywhere, because that was the impact that Star Trek had. With Indiana Jones, I was still seeing it quoted everywhere. Like, I know all of those, all those cartoons that were making fun of Indiana Jones, like Rescue Rangers, Chip and Dale, right? One of them was wearing Indiana Jones's jacket.
Monterey Jack.
I don't think it was him. I think it was either Chip or Dale. I can't remember which is which.
You're right. I believe it was Chip.
I'll take your word for it. But either way, so it was referenced everywhere. But when I actually saw the movie, it still felt fresh and exciting.
Well, and my thing about Star Trek is not that it's old hat or not. It's just that it's a nerd niche, right? Like, you're a Star Trek or a Star Wars person. It's like where you put your camp. It's like white versus black and chess. Like, you know, it's one or the other. They fight it out. But for me, Indiana Jones is not just that it's neutral ground. It's just 1,000 people have tried to rip off James Bond. And James Bond, of course, I'm teaching AP World. It's like Christianity of being like absorbing other local religions. Like, it absorbs other film styles, but no one has gotten Indiana Jones right. Just like no one has become James Bond. You could argue that Mission Impossible is, but even that is not quite James Bond. Right?
Kind of The Mummy with Brendan Fraser was kind of Indiana Jones.
Well, and we'll get into this because I think you and I can agree, if anything, this movie is flawless.
Oh, it's an amazing movie.
So this is going to become more of a filmic discussion rather than a movie discussion.
Do you remember the Die Hard episode? This is going to be that.
Yeah, but with much less masturbation.
Are you kidding me? My pants are unzipped right now.
Girl! You want to give me a plot synopsis just because we're here and we haven't done it and we're almost 10 minutes in?
You want a plot synopsis for Raiders of the Lost Ark? Okay.
Here, I'll tell you what. I never do this, so let me try.
Okay.
So we've got Indiana Jones, and we're introduced to him completely in shadow as he tries to save a Mayan or Incan. It's a Latin American. It's an early American like statue.
Right.
And we're introduced to him in the way that a hero has not been introduced in possibly 30 years since, in this incredible temple sequence. But he's bested by the fact that even though he's gotten the idol, he doesn't realize he needs backup. And so the whole rest of the movie, his character development is learning to rely on other people, as this guy named Belloc. A French archaeologist steals the statue because he's convinced the local tribe to help him. When he's returning to his West Coast Ivy League, whatever university.
We could look up the fictional university that he teaches at, but we were too lazy.
Well, I mean, it looks like it's at like a Yale or a Harvard because he's an American. Everyone yeah. around him is American, but it's from the West Coast of the U.S., as we learn from the map sequence later. We learned that a bunch of G-men effectively are saying, look, Dr. Jones, the Nazis are after a treasure at a place called Tanis. And Tanis, other than being an amazing podcast, is an ancient Egyptian city in which the Ark of the Covenant used to be. Can you help us find the Ark of the Covenant before the Nazis do? Now, as a historian, I know that the Nazis actually were looking for ancient treasures, and in fact, the Spear of Destiny, which by mythology is the spear that stabbed the side of Christ by a centurion, Hitler found and put in a cathedral in Austria in his hometown.
The alleged spear.
Right, one of six. In fact, one is still in Constantinople, which is now Istanbul, which, if you don't know what that means, there's a song by the historians, They Might Be Giants, that explains the whole thing. But at the end of the day, Indiana Jones must get to the Ark of the Covenant, which is the golden vessel, which Von Daniken said aliens gave to Moses, that held the Ten Commandments and has incredible power.
Now, can you do an Art Bell impersonation? Because if we're talking about aliens, that just feels like what we need to do.
Well, I can do an Alex Jones. I have to hide my microphone underneath a bunch of testosterone, so excuse me while it's rubbed against my genitals.
Well, faux testosterone, let's be honest.
Aliens have found this, and the Jews, I mean the globalists, I mean the Jews have hidden it underneath Egypt, and they're going to try to control us with all of their power.
All right, now folks, the problem here is that the Nazis are trying to take over the Ark of the Covenant in Egypt, all right? Now, here's the thing, though, is that they're globalists. They're globalists that want to rule the one world government, and we don't need that in our lives. We're a national society, people.
Excuse me. I'm sorry about that.
Now, the problem is here, Alex. Oh, my God. My accent went Scottish instead of English. What's that English asshole who's the fascist who works for him? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, God. Oh, yeah, I know. I can picture him.
I'll just go full Bonnie Bear. Now Alex is angry. Now, I mean, here's the thing about all of this. It's ironic because this whole movie is about punching Nazis in the face. And God bless this movie for it.
Oh, man, it wasn't in this movie. It's Last Crusade where Indiana shoots one bullet and goes through like seven Nazis at once. That's an amazing scene.
And here's the thing. I think the second one's better than Daniel remembers.
Well, I mean, the one I think I grew up on the most is the third one. I seem to remember seeing that one and rewatching that one way more than Raiders.
Or Junior. Junior.
Junior? Now,
I mean, the whole thing about this is...
It's a fake. Look, you can tell.
Well, and I mean, like, the interesting thing about these movies is not that it's archaeological. I mean, and everyone from... historians I've talked to Welcome to Night Vale reference the fact that he's like the worst archaeologist ever, but that's not the point. It's not that he's a bad archaeologist, and they even, I think two scenes in, his dean comes in and the crusty old dean comes in and says, now you made sure to follow all the archaeological treaties, right? Wink. Here's the thing. This is not about archaeology. It's about fighting evil. Every time. Like the third one even has this thing where they're trying to find the cup of Christ, right? Like the Last Supper, the Holy Grail, literally the Holy Grail. And they're fighting the Nazis. It's good versus evil. It's the most innocent example of pure versus evil.
Well, what this is at the center is a Jewish revenge story, because Spielberg is a Jewish man. And
really? I've never heard that.
I think he's brought it up once or twice.
Have you seen, like, Schindler's Fist, the fighting movie? Or
Yeah, that one. Anyway, though, I mean, this is about a Jewish relic that's destroying the Nazis. And let's not even bother with spoilers. This ends with a bunch of Nazis getting killed by the wrath of God.
Also, at this point, I think it's almost worth mentioning, this movie is notorious for mentioning the fact Indiana Jones doesn't matter to the plot. In fact, he makes the movie worse. Because he's the hero of the movie, quote unquote hero, but he's the one who corrects Belloc's math. And he actually is the one who ends up having to hand over the Ark of the Covenant. Had he not even been in this movie, Belloc would never have found the Ark of the Covenant.
Well, had he not been, well, if Belloc hadn't been in this movie, they would have opened the Ark of the Covenant in the middle of Berlin, which would have been fun. But.
No, but he would never have found it because Indiana Jones was the one who discovered that his math was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we should walk through this movie. After Indiana Jones is there, the G-Men found Indiana Jones, they're mentioning a guy named Ravenwood. Ravenwood was the guy who trained Indy.
Abner Ravenwood?
Abner, exactly.
A very
right.
1930s name. I've never met anybody named Abner who's under 80.
I'm trying to think, but no, I think you're right. I was going to make one of those joke 'em ups that I'm famous for. Creative Loafing's funniest person ever. I think that's what the award they gave us this year. Funniest.
I take your word for it. The most I've ever gotten from a Creative Loafing is stop writing to us. We're not going to publish your letters to the editor.
Well, I mean, that's what I got after writing a bunch of beer columns for him. But, you know, eventually they forgot my name. But it turns out that Ravenwood's daughter, played by Karen Allen.
Of Animal House and Starman and The Sandlot fame.
And this movie fame. Let's be blunt. Yeah. She's known for this. We are introduced to her somewhere. We have no idea where. on the planet Hoth. She's in a drinking competition against the woman who lives in Central Park in Home Alone 2.
Oh, God. You're not wrong.
I'm not. I've never been wrong once. And after a drinking competition, the Nazis show up. After Indiana Jones asks for the headstone for a walking stick or whatever they call it.
Now, considering this is going on Mission Briefing, should we mention the little bit of trivia around that guy?
Please.
Usual Mission Briefing host John will frequently tell us that that character, who I believe is named Toth, is his second cousin. That the actor that played him is his second cousin.
Yeah, literally. And John, as an Englishman, is not a Nazi. But as this was filmed at Pinewood, everyone ends up... It's a very incestuous, like, as a metaphor... filming group. So it's a bunch of Englishmen. In fact, at one point, despite the fact that the exterior is a school in California, a lot of this is actually filmed in England in the something something Masonic School for Girls, because you need things to look old effectively. After a mountain fight in this Himalayan mountain town where Ravenwood has been hiding,
in, what was it, Mongolia?
I believe so. We have this... Well, let's actually talk about this fight. Indiana Jones is half Casablanca and half James Bond. And kind of what makes the character work, right?
He gets introduced in this scene where it's just his shadow projected on the wall behind Marion.
Well, and... So this is a very nerdy reference that Thomas will appreciate, but one of the character things that Matt Groening always said as a cartoon is you should recognize a character from their silhouette. That's how you tell a good character. And Indiana Jones hits this up and down. Like, it's not just the fedora and the whip. It's this whole leather facade that he has around him. Like, he might be the most perfectly prototypical character.
It's not so much a leather facade, it's just an everyday 1930s adventurer facade.
Right, like, and Daniel and I talked about this before, but it's not just a serial, right? Like, because the whole thing is like this, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Like, I can even mask the mic here.
Will Indiana Jones make his way out of the pit?
This is your host, your ghost host.
No, I mean
Gregory Peck. Oh, by the way, the pigeon lady from Home Alone 2 is an Oscar winner. I feel like we should at least give her credit where credit's due.
Well, right. The Academy Award for Home Alone 2.
For My Left Foot, actually.
Yeah, My Left Ass. What? No, I mean, okay, so let's give her the credit. She deserves the Academy Award for Home Alone 2.
But if anyone deserved an Academy Award for Home Alone 2, it's Rob Schneider, let's be honest.
Donald Trump? Tim Curry?
Oh, Tim Curry, there you go.
I played the video game. I never got past the first level, and then I sold it.
I had the board game back in the day.
Wait, slow the fuck down. There was a board game.
For Home Alone 2?
Yeah.
Oh, damn right there was.
Ooh, girl speak. What was that about?
Oh boy.
Did you ever play it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, you look at me like I'm crazy. Mousetrap was a board game, too. No one ever played the game. They just assembled the mousetrap.
Okay. I'm trying to remember the rules here. It had something to do with... It was kind of like a card game where everybody was given a certain amount of cards, and they'd have to play them kind of like an extended version of Go Fish, and... Along the way, they were collecting these like translucent yellow chips, and once you got a certain number of translucent yellow chips, you'd win.
That sounds atrocious.
You had to say yikes when you got like a pair of cards. That was a rule I remember.
Wow! That sounds like a train wreck. Okay, so
we got to find this now, don't we?
Yeah.
Oh, if we ever find the Home Alone 2 board game, we will play it live, won't we?
Okay, so let's get through this actual movie because, here's the thing. This is like a lot of very good movies we did. It reminds us more of the stuff we haven't done. If you haven't seen Indiana Jones, I mean, Daniel and I will say now, this is one you have to watch. It's just under 2 hours. There's nothing wrong with it. It's great. Do it. Right? So...
Yeah. No. If you haven't seen it by now and you're listening to this show, I almost want to say you're out of our demographic.
I don't know what the age demographic is. The location, like, guys, this movie was on a lot. No, actually, you know what? If you're younger, it's harder to find than when we were a kid. It used to be on TV a lot more. Anyway, so let's just walk through this. After that opening sequence, which might be the... For those of you who have been listening a long time, Super Troopers might be the funniest introduction to a comedy ever. In the first 12-15 minutes might be the funniest start to a movie, which is otherwise mediocre. But this movie might be the best action introduction to a character other than Dr. No.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly ever made. So just watch the first 20 minutes. If you're not sold, stop watching, but you're wrong. This movie is great. But after being sent on his way by the G-Men, Indiana Jones ends up going from Mongolia, where he meets his ex-love interest, who, I mean, hashtag me too, this is a weird sequence.
Oh, man.
The gender politics here is like, you left me when I was young, and you're just like, what's going on?
I was young, I was in love, and that's actual dialogue from that scene.
And he goes, you knew what you were doing. I didn't, I was too young, and just like, George Lucas, man, or whoever's writing this scene, back off. Regardless, after the Nazis show up, it turns out that she has the head of the, the walking stick, the seeing stone.
Well, the whole thing is that in order to find the location of the Ark of the Covenant, you have to put this headpiece on top of a staff that matches a specific measurement and then hold it in position in front of the sun, and it'll beam like where the Ark is actually buried. And Marion has that headpiece.
Yeah, her father, Ravenwood, found it. He died, and she kept it as a necklace. Problem is, the Nazis figured that out, too. And I say Nazis because it's literally Nazis in this movie. It's Indiana Jones versus the Nazis. And after punching a bunch of them, he becomes the hero of this movie. So fuck Nazis.
It's so satisfying to see somebody punch Nazis.
And So this sequence, which is a very Casablanca meets James Bond sequence, turns out that she rejects him. He gives her money and he goes, look, I'll come back tomorrow. You show me the thing. Nazis come up. They're not as generous of showing up the next day. And after threatening to torture her to death with a red hot poker, he shows back up and there's a fight sequence involving a lot of booze and a lot of fire and a lot of fighting. And fellow host John's cousin, after getting...
We are not thirsty.
After burning into his own hand the actual the headstone thing.
Yeah, yeah, the jewelry piece thing.
He runs out into the snowy bank and cools his hand in the snowbank just like Joe Pesci does in Home Alone. And the plot advances.
Well, it advances when Karen Allen's holding the headpiece at Indy and going, I'm your goddamn partner. And we go off to the Middle East.
And we end up in Marrakesh with Jonathan Rhys-Davies. I will help you as Salah fighting the Muslims and the Nazis.
Well, more than Nazis. I mean... No, I can't finish that. I was about to say this was relatively respectful to the citizens of that region, but it's not.
Well, but it's not terrible. I mean, it's like you said, it's supposed to be a serial. I give Spielberg credit for not making it awful. It's not great.
Well, the only caricatures are the Nazis, but even so, the denizens up here just aren't...
they're not great.
No.
But here's the thing. Watch the movie, man. There's so many delicious details. At one point, Harrison Ford and half the cast have dysentery. Spielberg doesn't because he just brought a bunch of Campbell's soup, and so he's eating healthy. Everyone else is too sick to move. After fighting a swordsman, the swordsman does a whole bunch of sword tricks like he's in a goddamn kung fu movie. And so Indiana Jones just pulls out his gun and shoots him to death. Like, there's iconic scenes, man. If you've never seen this, it's not that you're wrong. It's just that you've seen a lot of this. And unlike movies we've done in the past, we've talked about this with movies like The Thing. I think The Thing is a great movie. It's R-rated, so a lot of people haven't seen it. So scenes are lifted that you don't know. Indiana Jones is a PG movie.
Somehow.
Yes, you're right. Somehow. And we'll get to the end of it. But you can just pick it up and watch it, man. Like, if you haven't seen it, it's one of the few movies where things are ripped off and the original is better. Every sense of the word, it's a better movie.
By which he means Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark is the better movie than everything that ripped it off.
We'll see about the other three movies we're going to get to.
Oh, boy.
So, let's just cut to the end, Daniel. We've already been talking almost half an hour.
Oh, the end? I mean, we're skipping over the scenes where Indy is in the map room and that great little moment when the sun...
Do it.
Well, I mean, there's this bit where they find out the Nazis are digging for the Ark in the wrong place, and Indy and Salah know, like, the actual measurements of the... They know how to find it, basically. So they go into this ancient map room, and then it's this bit with Indiana in a turban and a white cloak,
yeah,
sort of thing. And, I mean, it's this great scene because it's all silent and it's all dependent on the score, and he's just standing there. And there's even these little bits where he, like, acknowledges his archaeologist profession, where he's like making notes and details, and he has a little archaeologist brush, but he eventually just sticks the stick in the right place with the headstone and headpiece, and everything works
well. And like everything about this, like he finds it's a version of Egyptian, Coptic Egyptian, that he doesn't know, and there's this like Osama bin Laden looking fucker who just
The guy that translates it, and
and the monkey, and the dates have been poisoned.
Oh, we haven't mentioned the
monkey. By Omar Epps, and
Yeah, you're not wrong.
No, I mean, like, there's this guy with an eye patch who's been following him forever, and there's a capuchin monkey, and the monkey eats a date that's been poisoned by what's-his-face. And this movie is a masterpiece of, like, side characters, man.
Bad dates.
Bad dates. I don't know that why I gave him, like, a Dougie Doug voice. Just like,
well, you need to go deep to be John Rhys Davies.
But it's the Muslims in there. Like, it sucks that John Rhys Davies turned out to be an asshole.
Why did he turn out to be an asshole?
Oh, he's Prison Planet type anti-Muslim guy now.
Oh,
yeah, no, it's no good.
I haven't kept up with him since Gimli, so forgive me.
No, you're not wrong. anyway, regardless, they you're right. This is film 101 for action. Like it does the thing that Spielberg does well, which is homages. Like it's fair. Like there's Lawrence of Arabia shots everywhere.
Well, the thing about that scene and most of these scenes in particular, which I know when I described that scene, I sounded like a 7-year-old trying to relay what he just saw on TV to his parents.
Yeah.
Oh my God! There's like a thing that just happened in the bad guy lot.
All that junk. But anyway, films work on an emotional level. That's the primary spot that they're aiming.
Well, and this might be the perfect example of show, don't tell as well, because exactly. Indy has lines, but it's not as many as you think.
And there's no quips either. He is very straightforward and matter of fact.
I mean, like, the only time it's not even that he's funny, it's just that he's flummoxed, is when he's a teacher teaching.
They had this great bit, too. After they go to find the Ark of the Covenant, but it's in this pit that's filled with snakes, which Indy hates famously. And the Nazis, after he pulls it up to the surface, the Nazis intercept it and then want to seal him in this tomb. And Belloc, his arch nemesis, says something, but instead of replying with a quip, Indy just looks at him and goes, "You son of a..." Which to me was one of this great acting choice.
And the thing about it is, unlike a Bond movie where he says it directly, like you said, to the actor, he's just like, "Oh shit, the snakes are everywhere." It's really like, "You son of a bitch." Like he's like,
"Oh." Well, it is cool when he burns a lot of them with gas.
I mean, and then like you know, I mean, it's not that they escape using MacGyver shit. He just notices a crack in the wall. And then so very quickly, this is a myopia, not a full Bond episode, even though we're talking Bond. Eventually, we end up fighting, actually trying to open the Ark of the Covenant. So on a long mount, you know...
There's so much in between here, though, too. I mean, I feel like we're jumping over, like, the guy gets diced by the propeller, which was a scene.
An amazing fight scene.
I remembered that very vividly from when I was a kid. Or the car chase scene where he's punching out the driver and recaptures the Ark, or the sub scene, or the...
There's a submarine in this. Like, there's a 45-minute, or not even, maybe half an hour sequence where this is literally a montage of Bond movies.
Pretty much. I mean, again, this was Spielberg's Bond fantasy that he always wanted to do.
Well, and that just shows, I mean, and I love the Broccolis and everything. This is their fault, right? Like, they could have let him do a Bond movie, and this and he could have fixed the late 70s, early 80s Bonds and made them something.
Oh, could you imagine if Spielberg directed Octopussy?
Octopussy may... No, because it would have been, like... we've talked about this before. 1941 is a disaster as a comedy. He can't do comedy. He can do straight action with jokes. He knows how to direct a joke, but not a comedy. Octopussy should be a comedy. I would say he could have fixed The Man with the Golden Gun.
Oh, that would have been good.
He could have fixed Moonraker. Can you imagine it?
No one can fix Moonraker.
Yeah, okay. you have to pick. Moonraker's Moonraker's fixable because you have to pick the two plots. Do you want the Bond villain with the who hunts and has horses, or do you want to do the space movie? Spielberg wants to make a space movie so bad. He could have made it. Also, Bond versus the aliens. Bond shows up in a half Moonraker, half Close Encounters movie. Oh my God. I might be fully erect right now. That's amazing.
Oh boy.
And then Duchovny shows up, a young Duchovny, because it came out in what, 88? No, not that
what,
late.
This one? 81?
No, no, no. Moonraker.
79, I think.
Collar tug, as my students say. I wish David Duchovny. David Duchovny was in Twin Peaks and what? The original Twin Peaks was 90s? Early 90s?
90 to 91.
So he was 90, 91. So if we had pushed it back, if it was a Tim Dalton movie, oh my God.
So, yeah, apparently.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, David Duchovny needs to be in a Bond movie, and that's what we learned from Indiana Jones.
Better than Joe Don Baker.
Oh, Jimbo. How you doing, Jimbo?
So we have one more with Daniel Craig. He's better than Mike Madsen in Die Another Day.
No. Oh.
You're saying he's not better than Michael Madsen?
I'm saying I didn't want to be reminded of the fact he was in that. Speaking of which, you know, the casting for Raiders of the Lost Ark is actually
spot on.
Pretty much. I mean, at the time, I know Harrison Ford now is like this legend, but he still was Han Solo at the time. He was not really an established person until this.
Well, and this is Indiana Jones, right? So it's 81.
Yeah.
And so we had Star Wars in 77 and American Graffiti in 75?
Earlier in the 70s, and he was in Apocalypse Now in The Conversation, I think.
Apocalypse Now, he's in for like 10 minutes.
The first scene, yeah.
Yeah. And The Conversation is a little longer, but not much. No. It's like maybe 12 minutes of it.
Yeah.
And Empire is 83?
82.
The next year.
I think it was 82, yeah.
Yeah, so the next year. I mean, everyone else is essentially Pinewood actors, I think. I mean, John Rhys-Davies was.
Paul Freeman was.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, I mean, and Animal House is still not there yet.
Well, I mean, Animal House is why Karen Allen ended up in this movie, which, you know, we were both really impressed with how the movie treated Karen Allen.
Well, I mean, other than drinking Men Under the Table, she might be the best Bond girl ever. Like, if this is the American Bond movie.
All right, before Star Wars nerds scream at us, Empire Strikes Back was 1980.
Okay, so that's the year before this. So. Yes. He is not only more and more established, he's the best character because I love Luke Skywalker. My daughter, who's two, points at the bad lip reading and he goes, it's me. And she points at the screen and goes, me. So she's going to be Luke for Halloween, which is cute. But, I mean, of these movies, Han Solo is the breakout, man. Like, I mean, have you put... Instead of Karen Allen, Carrie Fisher, I'm not going to fight you on it because Carrie Fisher's also kind of kick-ass. But I believe by this year, if this is really 81, she might be in Blues Brothers.
Who, Carrie Fisher?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, like, so she was busy being her own person. Anyway, I mean, we're getting to the end of this, so we should talk about the end scenes.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, Karen Allen shows herself as a very capable heroine. I mean, she's like equally capable of kicking Nazis, which was fun.
Well, and she is the one who drives the plot in a lot of ways. Indiana Jones shows up after she's figured stuff out, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. And she's the one that the Poochin monkey likes.
Yeah. So you want to cut to the end of this? Because, I mean, here's the thing. No, I mean...
You've asked so many times. Let's go ahead and cut to the end of this.
I don't want
to
fast forward through this, but it's just... It's such a good movie. There's nothing to talk about. So all we're going to be like, yeah, no, that's good.
Yeah,
no,
that's good.
That's good. And if you haven't seen this, I don't know what to tell you. Like, first go to MGM Studios and see the stunt spectacular.
Go to Madame Tussauds, see any number of Indiana Jones wax figures they have.
Everything about it, though, I mean, and we'll get into this probably by the end, but it's almost hard to say this is a franchise because you can't replace Indiana Jones. They talked about it. They tried. They failed every time.
Remember an April Fool's joke? They were going to have Bradley Cooper recast as Indiana Jones?
And the thing is, everyone you think who'd be good, you're just like, it's not Indiana Jones.
I could kind of see Bradley Cooper doing like a fan film.
I almost wish they had done it after Last Crusade immediately because...
Well, that's the Indiana Jones Chronicles or the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles or whatever that TV show was.
The one with River Phoenix.
It was a whole bunch of people.
Well, but like the point of it is, had you done it then and then had someone grow up in Indiana Jones, fine. But now it's been... I mean, the Indiana Jones 4 came out in 2008. And even that's now a decade old.
Oh, God. You're right.
I mean, and that's the problem. It's just that after swinging a miss, you need to either replace Harrison Ford or let it die. Because, I mean, I'm sorry, the man's in his 70s.
Well, they should have let it die after the third one because it literally ends with them riding in the sunset.
And if you wanted to start it again, get another adult actor and do it then. Right? No, I mean, honestly, like, it's 93. James Brolin could have been Bond. He would have been a fine James Indiana Jones. Just do it. But now you're just stringing it along, man. And at least they cut Lucas out of this next one.
All right, let's go ahead and get to the end scene because I know Nick's desperate.
Well, it's not that I'm desperate, but we should get there. John Rhys-Davies in Indiana discover the Ark, and after a fight sequence, which is actually very reminiscent of Bullet, driving along a mountain and fighting and fighting and fighting, they end up on this island, which could be wherever. It looks like it's in the Mediterranean. Cyprus or Crete. They're on top of a mountaintop. And they're going to crack open the Ark of the Covenant for the first time.
Well, Belloc's performing a Jewish ritual that's supposed to make it safe for the Ark to be opened. And then when they open it, who is it? That Nazi colonel that's with them? He reaches in and there's just sand in there.
Belloc is crestfallen because he's not sure if he did it right or wrong.
Well, he thought this would be a radio to talk to God.
Right. And which is very Von Daniken. If you don't know who I'm talking about, Eric Von Daniken wrote a book called The Chariots of the Gods, which argues that the Ark of the Covenant is a radio transmitter literally to God, and the God is aliens. But whatever. They reach in, and it's just filled with sand.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the ghost of Christmas past.
Oh, well, all of a sudden, all the electrical equipment on the island shorts out, and these spirits and ghosts start coming out from the Ark, and Belloc's going, "It's beautiful!"
And everyone starts evaporating.
Yes.
And Indy and Miriam, who are strapped to this kind of, like, pole, Indy knows what's about to happen and says, "Just don't look.
Marion, don't look. Don't look at it, Marion!"
And this is what's intriguing to me about the whole thing. Indiana Jones is kind of agnostic on these whole everything. I mean, and it's not that he's an atheist. He studies this stuff for a living, and he doesn't inherently believe that any of it has power, which is a very kind of British, like, it belongs in a museum. It doesn't have power, but it's beautiful, right?
Well, I think the whole thing behind India is I know all of the stuff that's written about this, but just because it's been written thousands of years ago doesn't mean it's true.
Right. And so for him, the fact that this has power, it doesn't weaken him. It proves to him that it deserves to be studied. And it's interesting to me because he's almost humanist about all of this. And then when magic happens, he can't even look at it.
Well, because that's the actual end scene right there. Belloc, his head explodes. Toth, his face melts. The Nazi colonel, his skull implodes. And all the Nazis that are witnessing the Ark of the Covenant be opened die in very horrific ways. But the actual final scene is...
him arguing with...
Yeah. him arguing with Army intelligence about who needs to have access to this. Him and Marcus are saying this should be publicly available, and they've like sealed it away in a box.
Yeah, and this, there's so much about this movie that's makes it a masterpiece. And you know, a while ago, and Daniel, we've had kind of you know cognac in a snifter kind of discussions about this, but I asked people. As people who like movies and you know, our audience is included in this, what is the masterpiece that you think you could show to anyone and they would understand that it's a masterpiece? My answer was Jaws. And you know, Daniel and I got into this, and eventually we might get into this again as a podcast.
I think I picked Wizard of Oz in this scenario.
But this movie would also fit. There's so many masterful shots. There's so much masterful character development and everything. And then possibly the best of it is the fact that none of it matters. Right? Like, because Indiana Jones saw, I mean, in many ways, the divine. It's not even magic. It's indescribable power. The indescribable power that Hitler wants. Just the reason that in real life he sees the spear of destiny as he saw it. And then it ends up in a crate in the middle of nowhere in the basement. And the line is perfect. It goes, as Indiana Jones, not only the discoverer, but clearly a masterful archaeologist, a professor at whatever this fake university is. And he goes, talking to the G-man, he's like, so who's going to take care of this? Who's going to look into this? This is a thing of incredible power. And he goes, top men. And he goes, yeah, but I know everyone in this field. Who's going to look after it? And he goes, top men.
Which would presumably include him as somebody who's witnessed what this thing can do.
And what the fourth movie kind of alludes to the fact that he is, which is what ruins the fourth movie in a lot of ways.
We'll get to that.
But we eventually just see this warehouse filled with things. And what you realize is, A, Indiana Jones may not be special because there's boxes of all these other artifacts, theoretically. B, that the American government might not be inherently honest because they might be as bad as the Nazis. At least they're not trying to use these to take over the world, though. But C, they're just a pit. They're not taken care of, but there's no top men. It's like a warehouse. It looks like my basement.
Pretty much. Well, that's why I think we'll get into this, but I think the third one had a more satisfactory ending where they find the Holy Grail, and at the end of the day, it's like, well, seeing it and touching it and realizing that it existed was enough, but it's not worth anybody's life.
Well, and that's why it's the conclusion. He knows it better than to give it to top men. He just throws it down the pit.
Well, it falls down the pit, but you're right.
Right, like, but there's that moment where he tries to reach and he goes,
let it go.
Let it go. I don't know, which is funny because, well, we'll get to there. I'm not even going to ask you. You're going to recommend this.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to recommend this. Do you want me to go ahead and give my final thoughts?
Yeah, let's do final thoughts.
All right, final thoughts. I assume everybody has seen this movie. This is something that I assume you're at least conscious of if you've never sat down and watched it all the way through just because of how many times it's been replayed. The thing about it is. I know how that sounds. I'm not sure if it makes the same impact today as it did back in the day, because I can just imagine how thrilling it was back in the day, sitting down at the theater and seeing this guy beating up the Nazis and going on a fight for his life to discover this relic. That would be like a midnight opening that I would have loved to have seen, but you still kind of feel it, even though it's been copied so many times. It feels as fresh as it did the day it was released, so yeah, this is a great movie.
Here's the thing I will say, too. Don't just watch it. Like, turn everything off, put it on the screen, and just enjoy it. Like, the problem is this movie's too accessible. Make a meal out of it. You know, this movie is the best. And we'll get into the sequels, but you don't get a better introduction to a character than this. Like, this movie is not just put together. It's a John Williams score. Like, the shots are masterful. This movie, like, John Williams, like, they wanted Spielberg to direct Star Wars. Spielberg wanted to do James Bond. neither of those happened. He made Indiana Jones instead. It's everything you could want. This is the movie of my childhood, and it's perfect. Now, for those of you who haven't seen it, I'm not going to shame you, but you should see it. It's so good. The female character is as strong as the male character, which doesn't happen a lot. There's not a lot of female characters. And unfortunately, the next one, it's not a strong female character. She just whines the whole time. But we'll get there. Anyway, stay tuned next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. You know what's coming next. It's Temple of Doom, which is a much more controversial movie.
Kate Capshaw, you certainly were in that movie, weren't you?
Yeah, she's a disappointment after Karen Allen. But here's the thing. I think it's still better than a lot of movies we've done on this podcast.
Oh, well, we've done some pretty crappy movies on this podcast. Yeah.
Well, so thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next week as we expand on the Jonesiverse. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by James Burns, and executive produced by Nick Hoffman and James Burns. It's produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Clay, and Thomas Herman. We are a proud member of the ESO Network and a product of the Better Podcast. Our theme is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at Tom and Dutch Hall.